Yes, I am the world. I'm John Batson. Russia, Ukraine, Germany. I welcome Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director of The Nation magazine, also the publisher, and a columnist at The Washington Post, writing most recently about Ukraine crisis. Katrina, I go to remarks by the now resigned admiral of the German Navy, Mr. Schönbeck. What he, Vladimir Putin, really wants is respect, said the admiral to an audience at a think tank in the subcontinent. And my God, giving someone respect is low cost, even no cost. It is easy to give him the respect he really demands and probably also deserves. There's more, but those remarks led to Admiral Schönbeck resigning his leadership of the German Navy. And what you'd have to say is the foreign minister responding in shock and amazement that an admiral would say out loud such things. But, Katrina, it does represent what I've watched over the years. Berlin and Moscow have been working together. They're certainly not regarded as enemies in Berlin and Moscow. So this present Ukraine crisis, is Germany the way forward? Is NATO now reinforcing the frontier with warships and warplanes? Is NATO the way forward? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. NATO is certainly not the way forward, nor is the likely deployment of additional U.S. troops and contractors to help train Ukrainian forces, which seem to be on the plan agenda of President Biden and the United States. If you think if any U.S. personnel end up on the front lines and are killed in the event of a Russian invasion, the stakes and the prospects for escalation, which we're already seeing with weapons pouring in and troops now being discussed, I don't think the vice admiral or Germany is the way forward. I do think a political diplomatic resolution, even at this late stage, is what is needed. But I think France plays an important role. My colleague, I mentioned my colleague because of the American Committee for East-West Accord, Anatole Levin, who's been on your program often, had a terrific column the other day about Emmanuel Macron playing the De Gaulle role in this issue. I mean, remember France left NATO in 65, 66, I think. But he's talking very clearly about not wanting to be as involved in this tussle. And as you know, the relationship between France and Britain is wonderful. I'm being sardonic. But the appearance of really unsourced intel reports this past Saturday, late, 10:30 p.m. in New York, it was interesting because the New York Times ran it big, the Washington Post. But many people, I think, are a little more sophisticated post-Iraq, want to see more. No intercepts have been produced. And it's kind of farcical if you try to drill down into the British story. But there's no question, as I write in the Washington Post, toward the stumble, stop the stumble toward war in Russia, that the hawks are ascendant. And to stand back, which we saw for a period of time, because this has been going on for days and weeks, is not succeeding.
The Ukrainians at this point are, yes, they have opinions too. The Ukrainians lead the defense, but they are not part of the defense treaties. They're not part of NATO. So the puzzle for some days has been, what is the obligation of the United States to Ukraine? It certainly have been involved in Ukraine's development since the fragmenting of the state in 2014. But after the president's remarks last week about that he will not send troops to Ukraine, we now have this development of U.S. troops to Europe. Is this escalation? Is this mission creep?
Good question. I mean, no president. There's a dishonest, delusional conversation going on because according to Article 5 of the NATO Charter, you know, where every member must come to the defense of another member. Ukraine is not a member, nor is Ukraine of territorial integrity because of the civil war that is occurring on its territory, which has become a proxy war, a geopolitical war between U.S., NATO, and Ukraine and Russia. But this is delusional that U.S. forces are going to be sent. So they are doing a kind of, we didn't do too well, John, in the last insurgency. We participated in my memory. I mean, I don't mean to be sardonic. It's just so tragic. But we exited Afghanistan months ago, cost $5.8 trillion. We can't pony up $5 billion for humanitarian catastrophe, which Ukraine is suffering from as well. So I think, the hotheads are having a field day, the armchair warriors. And I include in that, you know, Victoria Nuland, who participated in the coup in 2013-14, and McFaul, Michael McFaul, who was ambassador to Russia for the Obama administration. He's going on about sending weapons. And, you know, the ability to negotiate and to treat diplomacy and restraint as something serious and tough, it gets labeled as appeasement in our media culture so quickly, John, that it's stigmatizing, demonizing those who seek an alternative way. So I think we're in a bad place, and there's things on offer. Minsk II, Normandy, which Macron spoke of the other day, it requires a will and a way. And I think the German vice admiral is interesting, because you know that expression, you'll know it, John, I forget, but about a gaffe. A gaffe is when you kind of reveal the truth.
Right. Saying the quiet parts out loud is called a gaffe.
Right.
Yes.
And I suspect that view, not in the entirety of the new German government, because the Greens are not with this vice admiral, who is a conservative. But I suspect that's a view that's widespread, not just in Germany, but in the European alliance. And ironically, what may happen as a result of Ukraine is a kind of cracks revealed, and perhaps more than revealed, in the European alliance.
Is NATO itself at risk, Katrina? The fact that Germany is apparently dissenting and the U.S. is not promising troops to Ukraine, while other parts of NATO, for example, there are 200 Canadian troops in Ukraine right now.
Yes.
They've been training. So is NATO cracking apart the way Ukraine cracked apart?
Oh, I don't think we're there yet. I think NATO has sufficient resources, billions of dollars. It has found a new purpose in Ukraine. But it's not as sturdy as some think. And I am a realist, but if you could see a new security architecture emerge from this crisis, one that was more demilitarized. But at the moment, there's a human cost too. I was reading the New York Times Sunday Magazine cover story, In the Trenches in Ukraine, and it ends with a Russian in Donbass, in the eastern part of Ukraine, the Russian-speaking part of Ukraine. He'd just come from another funeral, and he was a veteran of the Afghan wars, the Soviet war in Afghanistan, and he said, "What is this war? I don't understand it." And I think the civil war, again, that has become this proxy war and leading to 15,000 civilian deaths, if not more, is not going to be resolved by putting in trainers, troops. And what if a U.S., you know, the quagmire that develops if U.S. trainers are killed? I mean, these are unintended consequences. Finally, there's the repercussion. By the way, there is discussion about, like, China and what it will reveal to China. Will it... And Xi, by the way, and Putin, I think, are meeting next week at the Olympics. How that's going to be covered, I don't know. But it's a perilous, perilous moment. And for Biden, who's facing such crises at home, and we face different crises with COVID and climate and poverty and inequality, I mean, this is not what is needed in these times, more war. And I think Russia, it's been treated... Let me just it's interesting to me, every journalist seems to have a key on his or her computer, Putin, Putin, Putin. I've been following Russia, and Steve, of course, my late husband, for years, and it was not like Brezhnev, but it's almost like he's the only man in Russia, when in fact there's a blob and an establishment inside Moscow. And Putin is reputed to be kind of a referee centrist, but there are hawks in Russia who are angry about going soft on Ukraine after Donbass and seizure of the Donbass. So I think respect is not the worst thing. I think Lavrov is a tested, effective foreign minister. The next step, as I understand, John, is the U.S. is supposed to respond in writing,
yes,
isn't it, to
yes,
the
yes.
Russian?
That was the remark.
My personal footnote is, I kind of wonder why the emphasis on writing, written agreement. And I wonder if there's something in Putin and the establishment's mind about how Gorbachev was taken I don't believe he was, but was taken by Baker and George H.W. Bush in Germany in 1990. In Russia, there is often, the appreciation of Gorbachev inside Russia is not good, but there's often how he was taken by the West because he didn't get a written agreement.
Katrina's referring to the anecdote that Mr. Gorbachev did not ask for the promise that NATO would not advance to your borders in writing, that it was said
not
aloud.
One inch eastward.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was said aloud many decades ago. And now the anecdote is that in the Kremlin, that is a popular story to continue the demands of NATO. Katrina Vandenhoevel is the editorial director of The Nation magazine. She's also the publisher, and she writes for The Washington Post about what is undeniable, a march toward war. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.